This is the Yara Crop Nutrition Podcast. Yara is the global leader in crop nutrition knowledge and the leading producer of quality fertilizer products. The podcast is intended to facilitate the transfer of knowledge for farmers and crop advisors, improving farm profitability and environmental sustainability. With Yara, knowledge grows.
Thanks for joining another agronomic tip of the week on Yara's Crop Nutrition Podcast. I'm here again with Dr. Steve Petrie, and this is part two of our soil podcast. Last week, we talked about soil texture and how to take a soil sample, and we talked about that and what that all means as far as fertility. Now we're going to continue with soil structure. And this is a topic that I don't know very much about, but Dr. Steve does. So what do we need to know about? How is soil texture and structure different? And what do we need to know about soil structure?
Oh, good question, Scott. And when we talk about texture, we're really referring to the size of the individual soil particles and how many are present in the soil. Mm-hmm. In other words, the sand is coarse, and if we have a lot of that, we refer to it as a sandy soil, or if it has sand, silt, and clay in about equal feel, then we call it a loam, or we can end up with different modifiers. So we have sandy loams and sandy clay loams and so forth. So that refers, those terminologies refer to the texture, which again are the size of the individual soil particles. How those particles are aggregated together is then the structure of that soil. And the structure can take a range of different shapes in the soil, and those can be reflective of, in some cases, some of the chemistry in the soil, as well as maybe some of the how it's been treated by farmers and so forth in their process of managing the soil. So texture is particle size, structure is how those particles are arranged in the soil.
And did you say that structure can be manipulated by the farmer?
It can be both negatively in the short term, but there can also be positive things that can happen to structure with good soil management. If soil is worked with tillage equipment when it's too wet, particularly soils that have a higher content of clay, we can end up causing damage to the structure of the soil, creating clods and so forth that may be hard to break down, interfere with planting. We can cause compaction and so forth. And so we can be a negative impact. On the other hand, if negative things have happened to the soil, either because of the requirement that perhaps we had to get in the field at a wrong time, or we purchased ground that needs to be improved, good soil management can improve soil structure. And things like staying off the soil when it's too wet, growing cover crops, or adding other sources of organic matter to the soil will help improve the structure. Now, we can degrade structure in one or two operations that are done at the wrong time. To overcome those damage or to overcome that damage may take a much longer time period. So we're way better off to treat our soil well all the time than we are to try to correct it if we have had a problem.
Why is the texture and structure important, and why do we need to know what it is? How does that help us with our management of the overall crop?
Sure. Well, let's take texture as the first thing. And texture is a good indicator of the potential productivity of that soil. Now, again, management allows us to do things that help us overcome constraints. But for example, if we have a very sandy soil, perhaps it's a loamy sand or a sandy loam, we know that barring unusually high or low organic matter, just looking at the mineral fraction, if it's a loamy sand or sandy loam, it's most likely going to have a very low cation exchange capacity. It's going to have a limited ability to adsorb nutrients and hold those in the soil. So we're more likely to worry about leaching of nutrients from the soil because of the high water infiltration rate, and the low water holding capacity of a soil like that. It also has a lower nutrient holding capacity. And so as we put fertilizer on, if we put on a big dose all at once, there's a greater possibility of moving that fertilizer through the soil. Now, if we manage our irrigation water and our nutrients appropriately, we can make those soils productive. but we have to work much harder than we do in a soil that's perhaps a loam or a silt loam or maybe a clay loam that has a higher nutrient holding capacity just because of the greater clay content in the soil. And so the silt loams, the clay loams, the loams and so forth tend to have a much higher productivity. Again, we can overcome many of those limitations with good management, but it's much easier to manage a silt loam soil for high productivity than it is a loamy sand.
Let's talk about a minute about the water availability in these structures. What you know, we've talked about wilting point and field capacity. Can you help us understand that a little bit better, Steve?
Sure. Well, the coarse end of the size spectrum, when we talk about a sand soil, if we had pure sand, it would be have a very low water holding capacity. On the other end of the scale, if we had a clay soil, pure clay or very high concentration of clay, would have a very high water holding capacity. And if we look at numbers, in a foot of soil that's a sand, we can maybe hold maybe a half an inch of water. Maybe a little more than that. If we look at a clay soil, it may be many times higher than that in terms of total water holding capacity. Now, this gets kind of complicated, Scott, and so correct me if I don't do a good job of explaining this, but we have total water holding capacity, which again, the clay soil is very high. Then we have the available water, which is the difference between the water that's held in the soil and how much of it can actually be taken up by plants.
Right.
And it turns out that soils that are in silt loam category, maybe trending over towards clay loam, actually have the largest available water. Not that they don't hold the most total water. That's a clay soil. They hold clay soils or hold more total water. But much of that is held so tightly that the plants can't take it up. So when we talk about water holding capacity, we look at soils like silt loams, silty clay loams. Those are somewhere 2 inches per foot or perhaps somewhat greater, and that'll be affected by the organic matter content and so forth. But four times or more the water holding capacity of the sand that I referred to a minute ago. And so in the last podcast, we talked about, you know, ideal soil. If I could have my dream soil, it'd probably be a silt loam or a silty clay loam. One of the reasons that I say that is because the water holding capacity of that textural class of soils is about the highest in terms of plant available water. And again, 2, maybe 2.5 inches per foot of soil. So rooting system of a crop is 2 feet deep. We could hold 4 to 5 inches of water in that root zone of that crop.
Once you know your soil type, how do you know how much water holding capacity it has? And more importantly, I guess, because we're growing plants, right? How do we find out what is available to the plant so that we're not over irrigating or under irrigating?
Exactly. And there are people that are very skillful at simply taking the soil and feeling it and coming up with estimates of soil water. Mm-hmm. And that's a, it can be reasonably accurate, but the best way is really through various instruments. And we can measure the soil water by measuring directly the amount of available water in the soil, or we can measure the plant response to the available water in the soil. And both of those, the pressure bombs, for example, will tell us how the water status of the crop. We can look at the water status of the soil with tensiometers and gypsum blocks and other types of sensors. And then of course, we have models like Yara's Farm Water Advisor app uses a model, which looks at crop uptake, storage capacity of the soil, irrigation applications, and Scott, you of course are more familiar with that than I am. That's a very useful tool for monitoring the water status of the soil.
There are really good instruments out there and methodologies, whether they be soil moisture monitoring or plant moisture monitoring. We have a lot of data out there, and some of these things can be done with modeling and artificial intelligence. So there's a lot of different resources out there. Why is it important for a crop nutrition company like Yara to understand the water holding capacity of soils and the infiltration rate? Why do we even care?
Well, there's a whole bunch of reasons, and if I happen to overlook some, Scott, please feel free to jump in and add them here, because I know you've been very intimately involved in that part of the Yara game. When we look at crop productivity, in many environments, water availability is a limiting factor, or the most limiting factor. And that's true whether we talk rain-fed, higher water rainfall or low water rainfall, or even certainly in an irrigated situation where we're talking the Central Valley of California, where it may not rain from March or April through October. We're relying exclusively on irrigation, or even if we're using irrigation as a supplemental water source. The bottom line is that water is, in many cases, the most limiting factor for crop productivity. After, of course, temperature and so forth, length of growing season, but water availability. And so if we're going to get the most benefit, or if growers are going to get the most benefit out of the nutrients from Yara fertilizers, then it's incumbent on them to use the water that they have the most efficiently as possible. And so it helps our products to work better, helps the growers to get a better return on investment from fertilizer if they manage the water right. Another issue, of course, is that agriculture is the largest user of fresh water in the world, that component of food production, and how much of the total water use depends on where in the world one is, but it's a substantial portion of the total fresh water that's used by humans is used for food production. And so if we're going to minimize our water footprint, then we need to make sure that we use that water as efficiently as possible, simply being a good steward of the resources that we have available to us. When we talk about over-irrigation, then we talk about the possibility to leach nitrogen and other nutrients through the soil with potentially adverse effects on groundwater quality. And so, again, being good stewards of our environment and of Yara products, we want to make sure growers have the information available to them so that they can manage the water for optimum crop yield without excessive leaching.
I think that's really important. And as you were talking about that, I was thinking, boy, there's a lot of science behind this farming stuff. It's a contrast to what some presidential candidates have alluded to, right? There's a lot of science here. And I was going to say, you know, I really never understood, because I come from an irrigation background, that, you know what, if you over-irrigate, it's not that big of a deal other than wasting water, because it's just leaching in, it's filling our aquifers and recharging those aquifers. It's not that big a deal. But when you get to the point of combining that with the nutrition, the fertilizers that you're adding, if you're over-irrigating, you're leaching those and possibly causing groundwater issues. But equally as important is you're not utilizing those fertilizers in the plant production and fruit production. You're not maximizing the genetic potential that we've talked about many, many times. And so it's really incumbent on us to understand how the water is moving through the soil. How does it hold the water? And then knowing where that root zone is and how we can get the nutrients in that effective root zone so that we maximize not only the water, but also the fertilizer.
Exactly. And one of the things about water is we know, obviously, that excessive application can leach nutrients and has a potential for adverse effects that way. It turns out that at least for some of the crops that I'm familiar with, over-irrigation, independent of any adverse effects on nutrients, just simply excess water in the soil excessively wet for too long, can reduce yield and more striking reductions in quality. Mm-hmm. And the crop I'm thinking of is potatoes, where if we can control for the nutrient management, and there's ways we can do this in a research setting, but we're over-irrigating. Potato quality is decreased, even though the nutrients, ignoring all the nutrient issues, just looking at excess water contributes to poor quality or reduced quality more correctly. We know, for example, that many diseases are worse in soils that are excessively wet. And so there's a whole bunch of reasons why we as a fertilizer company, in order to see the maximum benefit from our products, we want to help growers utilize their water as efficiently as possible.
And one of the other components that we haven't talked about is the whole idea of air in the soil. So if I mean, air plays a very big part in how the plant can uptake the fertilizers and the water. If you are saturating that water so that there are no air particle or no room for air in the soil between those particles, you can get into a really bad situation, an anaerobic situation, and that's not good for the plants either.
Exactly. And soils that are saturated and, as you say, have very little air present, there's not only the biological effects on the plant root and reduced growth and so forth, there are also changes to the chemistry in the soil under those anaerobic conditions, under what we would call reducing conditions, which can change the availability of nutrients. Generally, in a negative sense, it makes them less available. And so we see biological and chemical effects from that excess water as well. So again, just one more reason that we want to know how to manage that water as efficiently as we can, and why Yara is worried about it when we're a fertilizer company.
Yeah, you would think that, selfishly we'd want to sell more fertilizer, but no, we actually want to make sure that all that fertilizer is being used properly, because it's a whole sustainability game, right? It's the marathon that we're trying to run here.
Exactly. I'm glad you brought up that word sustainability, because it's so important to Yara. And that's, the whole system needs to be sustainable.
If you can master the soil and making sure the structure is right, you're not destroying the structure and you're managing all the inputs, whether it be water, air, nutrients. And if you're farming that soil, that's going to give you a better chance of reaching the genetic potential.
Exactly. Yep. And I've heard it expressed more eloquently than I can state, but soils are one of our greatest non-renewable natural resources.
Ooh, that's good.
And when we talk about non-renewable, we think about things like fossil fuels and so forth that have a finite amount in the soil. And yet our soil is finite. And if it's eroded or degraded through mismanagement, then in many cases, in our, I'd say our lifetime, but in the lifetime of us and our children, in many cases, those degraded soils will stay degraded. And it's incumbent on us as advisors and on farmers as managers of the soil to protect that resource, because we have the most precious resource that's available, and that's food, 100% dependent on good soil. Now, recognizing we do have some greenhouse production of crops and so forth, but by and large, our food production, in many cases our fiber production, is absolutely dependent on maintaining the soil quality. And so things like texture, structure, management, nutrients, water, all go together to develop a sustainable system.
I think that's a great way for us to end this week's podcast. I think it's really important to understand soils, what type of soils you have, how that type of soil reacts to fertilizers, whether with the cation exchange, and how it reacts to water and holding capacity and infiltration. I might suggest that next we talk about soil pH. Is that a good topic for us next time?
Yes, we can get into soil pH would be the first in a couple of podcasts about the chemistry of a soil.
Oh, great.
When we talk about soil that's got chemical, biological, and physical properties, and we've talked about some physical properties, now let's talk about some chemical properties, and then we'll see if we cover the biology. That's an incredibly complex topic, but we'll touch on that a little bit in a future podcast as well.
I love the way you staged the cliffhangers at the end of our podcast, Dr. Steve. it makes me stay up all weekend long just wondering what's going to happen next week. We hope that you found some good information on this podcast about soil structure and water holding capabilities and how the water works. We look forward to you joining next week. Make sure you subscribe. Make sure you share it with a friend. And as always, you can make comments, suggestions, requests by just typing in your Google engine or whatever search engine you prefer. Yara Podcast will take you to a page where you can make some comments. We'd love to hear those. So Steve, hope you have a great rest of the week, and we'll talk to you next Tuesday.
Thank you, Scott. Take care.
You've been listening to the Yara Crop Nutrition Podcast. For more information about our company, please visit us at www.yara.com or yara.us, or for Canada, yaracanada.ca.